And please help me welcome our speaker tonight, Amy P. from 1212 in Allentown.
Hello, everyone. Hi, my name's Amy. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi,
Amy. Hi. So this is my first time with someone else recording me, and so I'm a little bit nervous. I have recorded myself for purposes of, I don't know, posterity. I mean, I'm an alcoholic, so I have an ego, and I like to hear myself talk, I guess. But so this is a new experience for me. My sobriety date is October 6th, 2018. I have a sponsor. She has a sponsor. I have the privilege of sponsoring other women in this program. I currently have three sponsees, and I'm very blessed to have them in my life. And I have a home group, as Colleen said. My home group is the 12 in 12, and we meet at 7 o'clock on Thursdays at 21st and Tillman in Allentown. So if you're ever in Allentown, please feel free to visit us. We go through all the steps and we do one tradition a month. And I've found it to be incredibly helpful, to my sobriety to do that. When I went through the steps, as they're outlined in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't really read the 12 and 12 with that as a supplement. So, it's nice to read that literature, and get out of it, what I can. So, what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like now, I'm going to try to share in a general way. There are other addictions in my story, and so I will intend to focus on alcohol, as this is Alcoholics Anonymous. I do believe that it is important to follow the traditions and not to have opinions on outside issues, but I also feel like, and this is just my opinion, that there are so many things that go into my addiction to alcohol, and my spiritual disease can express itself in many different ways. So drinking alcohol alcoholically was definitely a symptom of that. I didn't take my first drink until I was over 21, so I've never had an illegal drink. I've had plenty of illegal substances, but I never had an illegal drink. Not even communion. I took grape juice because both my parents are alcoholics, and they met at a halfway house AA dance, and so I am definitely an AA baby. And I was aware of their alcoholism from an early age, and I was also aware of the negative effects. So my parents did not raise me. I was raised by my grandparents. I'm very lucky that I was raised by my grandparents, I feel, and I have a different perspective on that and my childhood after doing the 12 steps than I did coming into this program. Coming into this program, I felt totally abandoned by my father. I felt like he was never there, and I didn't understand why he didn't raise me. No one ever explained it to me. It wasn't until last summer that I found out exactly why, and that is definitely a blessing and a miracle from this program, because without working the 12 steps, and specifically the 8th step, I would probably not have a relationship with my father today, and I am very grateful for that relationship. And I never would have imagined saying that, you know, even a couple years into this program. My mother also suffers from mental illness. I think she might be one of those people that they're talking about and how it works. But I don't know. She's had long periods of sobriety. And she is currently sober, and I'm very proud of her for that. My grandfather was a pastor. He was a Lutheran pastor, and today is actually his birthday. It's the day he was born. He's passed away. I was asked to speak, and I was given a bunch of dates, and I specifically picked this day because I felt like it would be a really good thing for me to do on his birthday. Grief is a huge part of my story, and when my grandfather died, I definitely just wrote myself a blank check to do whatever I wanted to or could possibly do to get outside of myself. I had bad consequences before he died. I was already, I believe, very alcoholic before he died. But I had always been trying to control my drinking up until that point. So, I feel now like I had a good childhood, and, being raised by my grandparents, spending a lot of time with my grandmother, who was just a wonderful woman. I was very blessed to have her in my life and to still have her in my life. And I graduated high school. I went to college. I got into a good school, and I did really, really well. And, one of the isms for me is perfectionism. And I basically had a mental breakdown partway through my second year, where I had been doing really well in classes and just was putting all this pressure on myself to just do perfect, be perfect. And I really already felt like I needed to drink. Like, I remember going up the stairs in my dorm and thinking to myself, man, I need a drink. And I hadn't even had a drink, you know, like, I didn't know the relief that actually came once I took that drink, but I could imagine it, and I needed that relief. I felt like I was just so uncomfortable, like, with myself, with others, like, I just didn't feel okay. And so I took a year leave of absence, in which I started doing some things that, were definitely process addiction type things. And then I went back to school, and, 2 weeks into that semester, my niece died. And, so that was devastating. You know, I had pinned a lot of hopes and dreams on this little girl, and when she died, I just felt like something inside me died, and the little bit of hope that I had was just gone. And then the next semester, I finished that semester barely, and then the next semester, halfway through the semester, I got a phone call from my aunt and my mother's sister, and then my mother got on the phone and she told me that my brother was dead. And so I have had a half brother, and he was raised by my mother's brother, and he died in a car accident. And I'll tell you that now, because I don't want to forget that the most impactful amends that I've had thus far was a graveside amends to him and the man that raised him, my uncle. I drove out to Gettysburg, and I had just recently, I don't know how recently, but I had just recently gotten a car finally. I'd spent like the first few years in, sobriety without a car. And, I drove out to Gettysburg and it took me 4 hours to get there. And then I made amends to my brother. And I went there with the intention of absolutely not making amends to my uncle. I had such a resentment against him that I just really could not even fathom the possibility of making amends to him. But I was so moved by making amends with my brother and just having an honest conversation kind of with him, you know, one-sided, but still. It was so impactful to me that I made amends to my brother, or to my uncle. And I got this understanding where, I could see him as a human being. Like, he did the best that he could with my brother. And it was just absolutely so freeing to walk out of that graveyard and get in my car that I actually got on the highway and I drove home in like 2 hours or whatever it takes to go basically the speed limit on the highway. It was incredible. And from then on, I have no longer had anxiety attacks driving. I can get on and off the highway without major issues. I do still have some anxiety in the car as a driver or a passenger, but it is absolutely nothing compared to what I used to experience. So that was absolutely incredible. But after my brother died, 3 months later, I met my friend, from high school at a bar in Allentown, and I had my first cigarette. And I went up to the bartender, I remember, and said, "That is the most disgusting thing ever. I'm never doing that again." And then within a couple months, I was smoking half a pack a day. And oh my gosh, there's a little ladybug on the stand. I've been seeing ladybugs everywhere. Oh my god, I'm so excited for this right now. I just feel like ladybugs are a good sign. Isn't that what they say? So soon after I started smoking, I took my first drink. And it wasn't earth-shattering, you know, like I had heard, I'd gone to a lot of meetings with my parents as a kid, and I had heard my dad's saying that when he took his first drink, he knew, like, that he had found the solution to all his problems or something like that. And I've heard that in meetings since coming to AA for myself. But nothing was earth-shattering. And, you know, I remember getting a little tipsy and that was it, you know? And so I was like, okay, like, I can do this. I'm not going to become an alcoholic. I am going to control and enjoy my drinking, not realizing that that was the most alcoholic thing that I could possibly think. And so I spent the next 5 or so years trying to control and enjoy my drinking, and it did not work. I used to think that I didn't drink a lot for the rest of college, but I did. Now it's come back to me that I got really drunk many times while I was in college. And I finished classes in December of 2007 and moved out to Ann Arbor, Michigan. And it was the first time I had moved for a relationship. Actually, was it? I feel like there was one other thing that counted. It's just amazing, like, how I can tell my story and think that I'm telling the truth and then have these realizations that, no, actually, that wasn't the way that it was. You know, it's so easy. Like, self-honesty is definitely something that came up. Dishonesty with self definitely came up a lot on my fourth step. That was, like, what I tell myself was the first time I moved for someone, but it was not the last. And I'm now in a program for that. I moved around a lot. I ended up in New York City, off and on. And there was a lot of drinking. There was a lot of other stuff. It got to the point where I had gone beyond just being miserable, like trying to do something about it. Like, I had just accepted that this was my lot in life and this is how, the rest of my life is gonna go, and I'm never gonna get better, and it's just gonna be miserable until I die. Until I finally get the courage to take myself out, or I am killed by someone, or I accidentally kill myself, or whatever, you know, like, that's just the way it's going to be. So, my aunt, my mother's sister, who had called me to tell me that my brother died, came out to party with me, and we were going to do a fun weekend in the big city. I don't know if she'd ever been to New York, but I don't think so. And, so I acquired a substance that I thought was one thing, and it turned out to be another. And instead of feeling all, you know, good and, like, mellow and all that stuff, we were up for days, and we made a decision that I was going to pack up, we were going to pack up all my stuff and leave New York for good. And, we were gonna get sober, we were gonna force her boyfriend to be sober, and we weren't gonna go to meetings, and it was just gonna be great. And the only reason I feel like I agreed to this, cause I think other people had tried to help me and tried to say something to me, but I wouldn't even hear it. Like, I only remember one person saying ever, I think you have a, it was my best friend from college. She said, I like you better when you're not high. And I was like, well, I don't like me better when I'm not high. So that was that. But she told me that her niece deserved better. And I took that to heart because she was using right with me probably, you know, and we do say, like, no one can reach another alcoholic like another alcoholic. And I do feel like she was sent by my higher power to get me out of there, because I was going down a worse path. I was trying to get into some things that were gonna further suck me in to that lifestyle. So I'm really, really grateful I got out when I did. And I came to Pennsylvania and lived with her and her boyfriend for a whole week, and then got in a fight with them and left. And that's what I did. You know, I just ran. I did a lot of geographics. I ran. I moved 6 times within my first year of sobriety. I lived with my grandmother for 3 months. And then I moved to 3 different houses until I finally moved into the apartment that I still live in today. And I've been there for 5.5 years, and I'm super, super grateful for that. I've basically wanted to move the entire time I was there. I've been there and I haven't. And I feel like that's a testament to the way this program works, because, like, me and of myself, I will just pick up and run, you know, have everything and run when I'm afraid. So when I came to Allentown, it took me about 2 weeks before I came to a meeting. I went to a different fellowship because I had done a lot of drugs, and I didn't really feel like I fit into Alcoholics Anonymous. And I actually came to my first AA meeting by accident-ish, you know. accident, where I wanted to go to a meeting and the closest one that I could walk to was an AA meeting. It was the Church of the Mediator in Allentown. And there were like very few people there and I was really pissed at how it works because the whole like beginning section made me really angry. Like, you're calling me inconstitutionally incapable and, you know, such an unfortunate and da 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 da. I took it very personally, but they had handed me to read it, so I felt like I needed to read it because I was a people pleaser too. And so, I stayed for that meeting, and afterwards they told me to go to Brown Bag where all the other druggies hang out, and it was amazing. I met a man who I refer to as my uncle today there, and we had this instant connection, only to find out a year after knowing him that he had known me as a child. He had been friends with my father in AA, and he had seen what my father went through as far as, oh, I think the ladybug just flew away. That's so sweet. He had been friends with my father, and he had seen what my father had gone through for the custody battle that, between him and my mom, and he had seen my father, like, basically start to lose his mind. And I found out that my father put his sobriety first, and he basically, like, made a huge, I mean, it was a huge decision, a huge sacrifice, whatever you want to call it, to not fight my grandparents for custody, just so that he could stay sober. And I really admire that now and understand that now, and I'm grateful to know it. So, for the first year and a half of my sobriety, I tried to find a sponsor, and I sponsor hopped a lot. I'm not even sure how many sponsors I've had. And I finally found one that was willing to take me through the 12 steps. And she took me through them as much as she could, as best as she could. But there was a vital piece missing from my fourth step, the fourth column, which is where am I to blame? What is, you know, what were my own mistakes? And my sponsor, who took me through all the steps thoroughly as they are in the big book, likes to say it is not about what my part is, because that implies that the other person has a part and I need to be looking at myself. This is not the other person's inventory. So after basically a gripe session, aka my then fifth step, suddenly magically I was on step 9 basically, and then my sponsor moved away, and I was left to my own devices, and I did get another sponsor at some point after I had been hospitalized for 8 days, I believe for untreated alcoholism. And I got another sponsor, and she tried to take me through the steps, and I just couldn't do it. It's like, after all this time trying to find someone to take me through the steps, I just couldn't do it. I was just too feared up. And so I ended up relapsing, and I went out one night and came back the next day, and it turns out that that next day is now my sobriety date, which is also the same day as the anniversary of my brother's death. And it's kind of bittersweet, but also kind of really awesome. This year I'm planning on going out to Gettysburg on that day and celebrating with my brother. And I'm actually really happy about that. I've never been to the cemetery on that day. I've always just had my anniversary at a meeting and celebrated my anniversary, and it feels right to honor his memory in that way. So my then sponsor broke up with me, and I was like, how could you do this? Like, I'm in this really awful situation with all these things going on, and like was just very self-centered about it, not realizing that she was doing me a favor. The next day, I went to a meeting. I hadn't slept that night, so I had someone drive me to a meeting, and they took me to Promises off of South 4th Street, and that is where I got reconnected with the woman who took me through the 12 steps. She is the kind of woman who, like, walks in the room, and everybody, you know, everybody's already turned around because everybody likes to see who comes in the meeting room, right? But she just lights up the room, and her, just the pure joy of her being is just such an inspiration to me that I had wanted to ask her to sponsor me before, and I was very intimidated by her, but I really wanted what she had, and so this time I was desperate enough to ask her. It took me a couple weeks to ask her after, like, talking to her on the phone and stuff, and she's like, I was waiting for you to ask me. I'm like, really? I was actually surprised by that. And so we met, and we talked about the first step, and she asked me if I was powerless over alcohol. She asked me if my life was unmanageable, and it was very easy for me to answer those questions that, yes, I am powerless over alcohol, and yes, my life is extremely unmanageable. And then I kind of had trouble with the second step. It was challenging for me because I felt like for a long time I identified as an atheist. My grandfather being a pastor was definitely an obstacle for me because I felt like he was a huge hypocrite, like it talks about. I let that get in the way of any sort of relationship with a higher power. And, you know, today also I can see that in a different way, that it's really hard to adult. It's really hard to work and be a nice human being and have time for things and all that stuff. But of course I didn't understand that as a kid. And, so when I came into this program, I did believe that God existed. I just didn't think that God I didn't think God would restore me to sanity. I was really of the impression that I was a special kind of awful, and that he would heal all of you, but for some reason I was terminally unique, right? And I remember sitting in the basement after the meeting with her, and I was reading her this worksheet that she had given me, and I just had this spiritual experience where I realized that if I did not take that leap of faith that my higher power would restore me to sanity, that I was going to go back to my old life. And the idea of going back to my old life was so horrific that I was like, okay, guess I'm taking this leap of faith. And then the next day, the very next day, a miracle happened where I arrived at work. I was working with this kid, and I would go to his grandmother's house where he was living, and sitting in this kitchen was this woman that I had met at a laundromat like months ago. And she and I had started talking at the laundromat. It was a laundromat that I usually don't go to. She said that she doesn't usually go to the laundromat. And so it was just very much like a God moment there. And she and I started talking about hair like you do. And we ended up talking about all sorts of spiritual things. And so we had had that connection. And so she's sitting in this woman's kitchen months later. I'd met her in Allentown. This woman lived in Bath. Like, it just was, I could not have planned this. And we spent, I didn't ask to be paid for this. I don't even remember what I said to my employer. I don't think they really cared. We spent the whole time that I was supposed to be there talking with the grandmother, the great grandmother, and this woman from the laundromat. And, at the end of the time, the laundromat lady asked the great grandmother if she wanted to ask me the question. I'm like, well, what's the question? You know? And the grandmother asked me if I was ready to accept God into my heart. And without missing a beat, I said yes. And I know that that was not the old me that was saying that. You know, like, I do believe that that was, like, me. Like, the real innermost me was said that, you know. If I had taken a second to think about it, I would have hemmed and hawed. And, you know, who knows what would have happened next. But the grandmother said, we all joined hands. The grandmother said a prayer. And she was familiar with the concept of anonymous programs because both of her children had drug issues, but she didn't know what the third step was, but she basically said the third step prayer in so many words. And I told my sponsor about it afterwards, and she's like, you just did your third step. I'm like, what? That's awesome. And she's like, we're going to start on the fourth step. And I'm like, oh, but after having done that work of the second and third step, like, and having that opportunity, I was able to get through my fourth step. And I was so happy when I finished my fourth step because I didn't think I could do it. I had tried so many times before. Like, I had tried twice before and, or three times, I forget. And so just not being full of fear and praying for 5 minutes before I did the work every time and asking God to protect me and believing that God would protect me, like, that allowed me to do the work. And then I did a fifth step with my sponsor. We were there for hours, but we didn't go over everything. She was eventually like, do you see the pattern here? And I'm like, yes, I do. Let's move on. And she asked me if I would have done those things if I had been connected to my higher power. And I honestly believe that I would not have done those things. And so when I do things today that are incongruent with my spirituality, I just, like, okay, I guess I better connect up a little more with my higher power. And so it was an incredibly wonderful experience. I definitely had the fifth step promises come true. Like, I was able to look people in the eye and all that stuff. You know, I just had a new lease on life. And we kind of glossed over 6 and 7 a little bit. Like, we didn't, like, I mean, we read them. But after, I listened to a lot of speakers on YouTube, and a lot of them, I've heard a lot about the importance of the 6 and 7 step, and have read the extra literature on it now and all that stuff. But that was my experience. You know, we read them and we moved on. And then I spent several weeks on the 8th step. And that's when I had my moment that I realized after praying for several weeks over this list of names that I spread out on my bed every night. And my dad's name kept popping up and kept popping up and kept popping out at me. And I just kept praying for health, happiness, prosperity, everything that I want for myself, for him. And I had already started talking to him again at this point. Like I didn't speak with him for several years. Something changed in me. Something changed in, I don't know if something changed in him or not. I kind of feel like it did, but I feel like it was mostly me changing. I remember actually the first time I called him in so many years, and I had a friend with me in AA for support, and she sat next to me during that entire half hour conversation, and that was really a powerful thing for demonstration of how this is a we program. The meeting has ended. Just notice, just saying. Anyway, on Zoom, doesn't matter. I don't think there was anyone else on there. That was really amazing because this is a we program and I cannot do this alone. And sometimes I do try to do this alone. Because that's kind of my default, you know. I was out there drinking and everything, and I wanted to be independent and make my own decisions, and well, look how well that turned out. So I heard a speaker say about how he's not management material, and I really like that a lot. But then I was listening to a speaker recently, and he was saying, like, about how it could be, like, co-managing or something. I don't know. I haven't really explored that concept. But, I mean, I personally believe that I need to take the action and that I need to leave the results up to my higher power. So as a result of doing these steps, I've had a lot of promises come true. And I love that there are promises for basically every step in the big book. It's just amazing how this works. So when I, not finished the steps, but you know, when I concluded this portion of doing the steps, I did have a spiritual awakening, and I realized that my process addiction was an addiction and that I needed to take action, and I really didn't want to, and I fought it for a little while, and I was at a meeting, an hour speaker meeting, and the speaker shared about how she had gone through a process addiction, and she had been active in that addiction for 7 years or something like that in AA, sober from drugs and alcohol. And then it was revealed to her that that was something that she needed to work on. And so in September of 2020, I decided to go to my first meeting in that program, and I went through the 12 steps in that program, and then I reviewed all the traditions, and we read the 12 and 12, we read that program's literature, we read Al-Anon's stuff on traditions and relationships, and it was really amazing. I had been in a relationship and was engaged to be married, and realized, like, my sponsor at the time was in both programs, and she's like, why don't we just get through the traditions before you make a decision about what to do about this relationship? I'm like, okay. I didn't even get, like, past the first tradition. Like, we were reading about unity and all this stuff, and I was just like, this is not the man that I'm supposed to marry. Like, I know this is definitely not going to work out. And there was this crazy thing that happened where basically I feel like God sent bed bugs to my apartment to get me, to help me to get this man out of there. It was like a, you know, a plague, like in the Bible or something like that. Not that it, like, that my life is like the Bible, but, you know, it just was so funny. Looking back on it, I never thought that bed bugs would be a blessing. But that's something that this program has given me, is to be able to see how things happen, and it's not, it's, I don't know if they're good or bad, you know? I don't know if what's going on with my life today is good or bad. I really don't know. Only time will tell, but I do believe that my higher power does have my best interests in mind, and does care about me, and does want me to be happy, joyous, and free. And I don't believe that I got miserable, or I got miserable to be sober. Actually, I think I did get miserable to get sober. No, I don't believe I got sober to be miserable. Today, I take care of my grandmother. I am entrusted with that care. I am entrusted with her health care, her financial care, and her just general well-being. And that blows my mind, because when my grandfather died, I still had his credit card because I was taking care of him at the time. And I do regret that he did not live to see me get sober, but I do believe that he's aware that I am and very happy for me. But when I had my grandfather's credit card after he died, I would go to the liquor store and buy a bunch of liquor and spend like hundreds of dollars on alcohol and then hundreds of other dollars on other things and, just whatever to get out of myself. And that was perfectly fine because I had real pain. You know, my grandfather was dead and, you know, I could justify anything. And I mean, I can still justify a lot today, but it's definitely harder. I'm able to listen to my conscience, today, more in touch with that. I did something a couple weeks ago that I've only told one person about, and I know that I need to make it right. It was so innocent, but it's like been eating me up inside, you know, like I was at one of those self-checkout counters, and I was buying two bottles of soap, and I scanned both bottles and put them in the bag, but only one of them actually rung up. And I've been having this huge thing with money lately where I just feel like there's not enough. I don't have enough. And, so I'm taking a part-time job to rectify that situation, but I didn't do anything. Like the self-checkout lady was right there, you know, and I didn't say, hey, this didn't ring up, or I didn't swipe it again or whatever, you know, like it would have been so easy to fix it in that moment, and I didn't. And this $2.50 bottle of soap is driving me nuts. And I'm like, I don't want to go out over freaking $2.50 of soap. Like, this is ridiculous. And I'm just so grateful that, like, I can look at that today. You know, like, and now that I've told all of you guys about it, I have to do something about it. Like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do, if I'm supposed to, like, just return the bottle or give them $2.50. I don't know. I need to talk to my sponsor, clearly, because she wasn't the one person I told. So I'm glad I got that out there. I feel much better. Thanks, guys. So I realized that not being perfect is part of the human experience. And that's been a really big struggle for me to come to that realization and accept that to any degree. I don't like not being perfect. And so therefore I frequently can disappoint myself. But this program gives me the freedom to make mistakes and gives me a framework on how to rectify them. And the 10th step, the 11th step are incredibly valuable to me. I try to do a morning routine with prayer and readings and meditation every morning. Do I do it every morning? No. Do I try to do it every morning? Usually. But I'm a lot, I feel a lot better about how often I'm doing it these days. I try to do a nightly inventory. I have a little app that lets me click yes or no and write stuff in it. And that's what's working best for me now. Ideally, I would like to write it down on pen and paper, because I find that that is the most useful way to do it. But I wasn't doing it at all when I was trying to do that, meet that ideal. So I'm like kind of meeting myself halfway right now and doing it on my phone, and we'll see where it goes from there. You know, like, my spiritual practice needs to evolve. If I continue to do the same thing over and over again, I tend to get stagnant, and I don't feel that growth. I kind of feel a little stalled out in some ways right now, and so I'm really, really grateful for this opportunity to speak, because my mood has totally done a 180 since I got here. I think a lot of it is about perception. You know, the self-pity, is really easy to get into, and, like, I knew, like, coming here, I was like, I can almost guarantee that after sharing my story, my problems today are not going to seem so big. Because look at where I came from, you know? Like, I was a miserable shell of a human being that was doing things that I just didn't understand why I was doing them. And I didn't like that I was doing them, but I was doing them anyway. Because I felt like this compulsion. And today I am free from that. I do not have to pick up a drink first thing in the morning. I do not have to pick up a drink last thing at night. You know, like, I can work this program and use these steps to connect to my higher power in a way that allows me to stay sober daily, you know, and I do want to stay sober for the rest of my life, and I do believe that it's possible, you know, and I need to continue to grow spiritually in order to allow that to happen. Like, I don't feel like there's a guarantee for that. Even if I do all the things that I think that I'm supposed to do for my sobriety, those things don't keep me sober. Like, if doing those things kept me sober, then I would be keeping me sober. And I don't believe that I keep me sober. I believe I can take the action that allows me to connect with myself and others, and most importantly, my higher power. That keeps me sober, you know? God keeps me sober. Without the action, I mean, if I took my will back and picked up a drink, like, I'm gonna get drunk. Like, God can't just, I mean, make alcohol magically not alcohol. But, you know, if I take the action that allows me to, you know, set myself up for this success can happen. You know, God makes it possible. I'm so grateful, and I firmly believe that my aunt was sent to take me out of that situation in New York, because I was not meant to die there. I believe that I was meant to help my grandmother, live her best life in her golden years. And I'm so grateful for this program too, because I actually spent the last 6 years not talking to my aunt. And around a month ago, I finally got over my resentment, because there was a whole bunch of drama that went down when I left. I finally got over my resentment and enough, not all the way, but enough to reach out to her and say, I want to make amends. And I drove to back to Spring Grove and I went into her house and I gave her a hug and we sat down and I told her what my wrongs were and she told me how that made her feel, and that was really hard because most of the people that I made amends to were like, oh, you're fine, just keep doing what you're doing, I'm just glad you're sober. But she did not. She told me how that made her feel, and it really hurt her. And thanks to this program, she is back in my life, and we don't communicate often, but we communicate, and I'm just so grateful for that. And thank you to Alcoholics Anonymous for that. And with that, I will pass it back to Colleen. Thank you.